I was so dead. There was no way out of that kitchen, no time to use an explosive evocation in close quarters, and the deadly scorpions would rip me to pieces well before Victor could blow me up with an explosive magic, or one of the blood-maddened Becketts could get their guns working long enough to put a few more bullets in me. My hip was beginning to scream with pain, which I suppose was better than the deadly dull numbness of more serious injuries and shock, but at the moment it was only the least of my worries. I clutched the broom to me, my only pitiful weapon. I didn't even have the mobility to use it. And then something occurred to me, something so childish that I almost laughed. Instead, I plucked a straw from the broomstick and began a low, steady chant, a bobbing about in the air with the fingers that held the straw. I reached out and took hold of the immense amounts of untapped energy running rampant in the air and drew them into a spell. Pulitas, I shouted, bringing the chant to a crescendo. Pulitas, pulitas! The broom twitched, it quivered, it jerked upright in my hands, and then it took off across the kitchen floor, its brush waving menacingly to meet the scorpion's advance. The last thing I had expected to use that cleaning spell for, when I had laboriously been forced to learn it, was to use it against a tide of poisonous scorpion monsters, but any port in a storm. The broom swept into them with a ferocious energy and started flicking them across the kitchen towards the rest of the balcony with a tidy, efficient motions. Each time one of the scorpions would try to dodge around it, the broom would tilt out and catch the beastie before it could, flick it neatly into its back, and continue about its job. I'm pretty sure it got all the dirt on the way, too. When I do a spell, I do it right. Victor screeched in anger when he saw his pets, still too small to carry such mass, being so neatly corralled and ushered off the balcony. The Becketts lifted their guns and opened fire on the broom, while I hunkered down behind the counter. They must have been using revolvers now because they fired smoothly in an ordered rhythm. Bullets smacked into the walls and the counters and the back of the kitchen, but none of them came through the counter that sheltered me. I caught my breath, pressing my hand against the blood on my hip. It hurt like hell. I thought the bullet was stuck somewhere by the bone. I couldn't move my leg. There was a lot of blood, but not so much that I was sitting in a puddle. Out on the balcony, the fire was beginning to catch, spreading over the roof. The entire place was going to come crashing down before much longer. "Stop shooting! Stop shooting, damn you!" Victor screamed, and the gunfire came to a halt. I risked peeking over the counter. My broom had swept the scorpions off the edge of the balcony and to the floor of the room below. As I watched, Victor caught the broom by its handle and broke it over the balcony railing with a snarl. The straw, still held in my fingers, broke with a sharp little twang, and I felt the energy fade from the spell. Victor Shadowman snarled. "A cute trick, Dresden," he said, "but pathetic. There's no way you can survive this. Give up. I'd be willing to let you walk away." The Becketts were reloading. I ducked my head down before they got any funny ideas and hoped they didn't have heavier rounds that could penetrate the counters I hid behind and whatever contents they contained to kill me. "Sure, Vic," I replied, keeping my voice as calm as I could. "You're known for your mercy and sense of fair play, right?"
"All I have to do is to keep you here until the fire spreads enough to kill you," Victor said.
"Sure, let's all die together, Vic. Too bad about your inventory down there, though, huh?" Victor snarled and pitched another burst of flame into the kitchen. This time it was much easier to cover myself, half shielded as I was already by the corner of the counters I hid behind. "Oh, cute," I said, my voice dripping with scorn. "Fire is the simplest thing you can do. All the real wizards learn that in the first couple of weeks and move on up from there." I looked around the kitchen. There had to be something else, some way I could escape, but nothing presented itself.
"Shut up," Victor snarled. "Who's the real wizard here, huh? Who's the one with all the cards? And who's the one bleeding out on the kitchen floor? You're nothing, Dresden, nothing. You're a loser. And do you know why?"
"Gee," I said, "let me think." He laughed harshly.
"Because you're an idiot. You're an idealist. Open your eyes, man. You're in the jungle now. It's survival of the fittest, and you've proved yourself unfit. The strong do as they wish, and the weak get trampled. When this is over, I'm going to wipe you off my shoe and keep going like you never existed."
"Too late for that," I told him. I was in the mood to tell a white lie. "The police know all about you, Vic. I told them myself, and I told the White Council, too.
You've never even heard of them, have you, Vic? They're like the Super Friends and the Inquisition, all rolled into one. You'll love them. They'll take you out like yesterday's garbage. God, you really are an ignorant bastard. There was a moment's silence, then, "No," he said. "You're lying. You're lying to me, Dresden." "If I'm lying, I'm dying," I told him. Hell, as far as I knew, I was. "Oh, and Johnny Marconi, too. I made sure he knew who and where you were."
"Son of a bitch," Victor said. "You stupid son of a bitch. Who put you up to this, huh? Marconi? Is that why he pulled you off the street?"
I had to laugh weakly. A bit of flaming cabinet fell off the upper shelf under the tiles next to me. It was getting hot in there. The fire was spreading. "You never figured it out, did you, Vic?"
"Who?" Victor screamed at me. "Who was it, damn you? That whore, Linda? Her whore friend, Jennifer?"
"Strike two, strike three, and the other side gets a chance to steal," I said back. Hell, at least if I could keep him talking, I might keep him in the house long enough to go down with me. And if I could make him mad enough, he might make a mistake. "Stop talking to him," Beckett said. "He's not armed. Let's kill him. Get out of here before we all die." "Go ahead," I said in a cheerful tone. "Hell, I've got nothing to lose. I'll send up this whole house in a fireball that'll make Hiroshima look like a hibachi. Make my day."
"Shut up," Victor shouted. "Who is it, Dresden? Who, damn you?"
If I gave him Monica, he might still be able to get to her if he got away. There was no sense risking that. So all I said was, "Go to hell, Vic."
"Get the car started," Victor snarled. "Go out through the deck doors. The scorpions will kill everything on the first floor."
I heard a motion in the room, someone moving about the doors onto the elevated deck at the back of the house. The fire continued to spread. Smoke rode the air in a thick haze.
"I've got to go, Dresden," Victor told me. His voice was gentle, almost a purr. "But there's someone I want you to meet first."
I got a sick, twisty little feeling in the pit of my stomach.
"Kalshazak,"
Victor whispered. Power thrummed. The air shimmered and shone, began to twist and spiral.
"Kalshazak,"
Victor whispered again, louder, more demanding. I heard something, a warbling hiss that seemed to come from a great distance, rushing closer. The black wizard called the name for the third and final time, his voice rising to a screech.
"Kalshazak!"
There was a thunder crack in the house, a dull and sulfurous stench, and I craned my neck to see over the counter, risking a glance. Victor stood by the sliding glass doors that led out into the wooden deck. Red-orange flame wreathed the ceiling on that side of the house, and smoke was filling the room below, casting the whole place in a hellish glow. Crouched down on the floor in front of Victor was the toad demon I had banished the night before. I had known that I hadn't killed it. You can't kill demons as such, only to destroy the physical vessels they create for themselves when they come into the mortal world. If called again, they can create a new vessel without difficulty. I watched in fascination, stunned. I had seen only one person call a demon before, and I had killed my own master shortly after. The thing crouched in front of Victor, its lightning blue eyes whirling shades of scarlet hate, staring up at the black-clad wizard, trembling with the need to tear into him, to rend and destroy the mortal being who had dared summon it forth. Victor's eyes grew wider and more mad, glittering with fevered intensity. Sweat ran down his face, and he tilted his head slowly to one side, as though his vision were skewed along the horizon, and by the motion he could compensate for it. I gave silent thanks that I had closed my third eye when I did. I did not want to see what the thing really looked like, and I did not want to get a good look at the real Victor Sells either. The demon finally gave a hiss of frustration and turned towards me with a croaking growl. Victor dropped back his head and laughed, his will triumphant over the being he had called from beyond.
"There, Dresden, do you see? The strong survive, and the weak are torn to little pieces."
He flapped his hand at me and said to the demon,
"Kill him."
I struggled to my feet, supporting my weight on the counter, to face the demon as it rose and began its slow stalk towards me.
"My God, Victor," I said, "I can't get over how clumsy you are."
Victor's smile immediately became a snarling sneer once again. I saw fear touch the corners of his eyes. Uncertainty, even though he was on top. I felt a little smile quirk my lips. I moved my gaze to the demons. "You shouldn't just hand someone else a demon's name," I told him. Then I drew in a breath and shouted out in a voice of command, "Kalshazak!" The demon stopped in his tracks and gave a whistling howl of agony and rage as I called its name and drew my will up to hurl against it. "Kalshazak!" I snarled again. The demon's presence was suddenly there, in my head, raging there, slippery and slimy, wriggling like a venomous tadpole. It was a pressure, a horrible pressure on my temples that made me see stars and threatened to steal enough of my balance to send me falling on the floor. I tried to speak again, but the words stuck in my throat. The demon hissed in anticipation, and the pressure on my head redoubled, trying to force me down, to make me give up the struggle, at which point the demon would be free to act. The lightning blue of its eyes became glaringly bright, painful to look upon. I thought of little Jenny Sells, oddly enough, and of Murphy, lying pale and unconscious on a stretcher in the rain, of Susan crouched next to me, sick and unable to run. I had beaten this frog once. I could do it again.